views, opinions, and positions expressed on this radio program are those of the speakers, authors, or other contributors, and do not necessarily reflect or represent the views and opinions held by BBS Radio Network or its affiliates. This broadcast is intended for entertainment purposes only.
Conscious evolution becomes inevitable, and the revelations to one's spirit becomes revolutionary within the simplicity of its own essence. Awakening then becomes of it to where the destination of such a path, when one has answered to the calling, unfolds to reveal the ripening of one's universal truths. The book of positive light, remembrance of the heart.
And now, here is your host for Quantum Mindfulness Radio, Joel Ayala Ayupanya.
Ladies and gentlemen, I thank you so dearly for joining me here tonight on Quantum Mindfulness Radio. And I am your host, Joel Ayala Ayupanya, author of my new book, The Book of Positive Light, Remembrance of the Heart. Quantum Mindfulness Radio broadcasts every other Monday, 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on the BBS Radio Network. Now, as the intentions of this show will be geared within this sacred space to guiding you into the realms of truth and into the revealing nature of such truths, on what had seemed to be a lonely journey, a lonely path, a darkened journey. But from along this path, as we of the light have held strong to our unbelievable faiths, we had reassuringly enough began to see that this once lonely road began to grow more and more brightened, as then we had begun to realize that our inner light, that inner light and brilliant light, began to shine ever so effervescently, like the sun. So, soon as before we had started to realize the significance of our shine, others from along this once bleak and lonely path began to join us in tandem, in synchronicity, for one by one by one. And now, they from the now, the slowly awakening from among the many, many growing numbers have now joined us in peaceful revolution to this dire need for truth. And so for tonight's show, I would like to just merely take in this wonderful moment to dedicate this broadcast to the late and great Dr. Masaru Emoto, a wonderful soul, researcher, scientist, and the author of his own book, Hidden Messages in Water. He is a dear and inspiring soul of whom has contributed greatly to his study between the relationship of intention, water, and consciousness. And Dr. Emoto has been one of those hearts of whom have been courageous enough to revealing the very truths of his work. And my special guest for tonight's show is definitively, for sure, no different, for she has been indeed one of those dignified of whom have been courageous enough to stand. She is a perfect combination of intelligence, passion, and of a speaker of sorts of an all-knowing truth. Her name is the brilliant and honorable Patricia Corey. Patricia Corey is a native of the San Francisco Bay Area. She is a world-renowned intuitive author, public speaker, and activist for the rights of human beings and of all animals, and more specifically, animals of our dear Earth. of whom have acquired the sacred right of blessing the very waters of Mother Gaia with that of heightened vibration and frequency. Our cetaceans, the whales and dolphins, the guardians of our dear Mother Earth. Patricia Corey has also been acknowledged by some of the world's most spiritual of leaders, from the likes of the Maya, the spiritual masters of Tibet, and the Peruvians, the surviving ancestry of the Inca, as that of being a spiritual leader herself, a peaceful warrior and protector of the light of the planet. She is the author of over 10 blockbuster and paradigm-shifting books published in over 20 foreign languages, with the addition of her most recent work, The Emissary, which has now been optioned to be a major motion picture movie production, which will star some of the most amazing of cast members, of which have been invited to joining such an inspiring work in progress for the portrayal of such truths in visual form, of which will be revealed to you in this highly anticipated movie production, The Emissary. So, ladies and gentlemen, for the very first time on Quantum Mindfulness Radio, I have before you the highly inspiring and commendable Patricia Corey. Patricia, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. What an honor and what a glowing introduction. Thank you.
Thank you, Patricia. Patricia, now talking about being a prolific writer yourself, you have written over 11 books, in more particular, your 13th book with The Emissary. Where does your inspiration come from? Not only in the spiritual form, but I know there's many facets of where you have become inspired.
Well, I'm inspired by love and by the celestial curiosity that has driven my perception from childhood. I've always been a sort of galactic traveler, and as a young child, my mom said, I already told her at the age of 4 that I was from another universe, a parallel universe, at age 4, and I had contacts with beings already at that young age who were very clearly guiding me on that journey, and who have appeared in different forms to me throughout the years, and who at 1996 appeared to me as the Syrian High Council, and that was a springboard definitely for the production of many, many books. As you said, I think I'm on my 13th at the moment, and but many works of guided transmissions and subjects that fascinate my life involve anything to do with alternative healing, galactic awareness, the animal kingdom, particularly the whales and dolphins, as you mentioned, but all living creatures, the plants, everything is vibration. And so I'm sort of walking between the spirit world and trying to bridge the gap with, let's say, the material world or a more scientific understanding, so that we can all get on board without being intimidated by the language of spirit or rejecting the science of reality as it's understood, and just understand that as we are moving and progressing now, it's very important to integrate these two aspects of our perception. So that's what inspires me, helping others, helping myself learn more and more about the greater significance of life and our mission as eternal beings on this passage through 3D. Earth,
right.
To be specific.
Now, just going back to how you just became to be to write your first book, as something of a word of inspiration for the many people who are compelled to write a book in themselves, what can you say for them to sort of spark that interest from within them to gain enough power from within themselves to begin writing their book? What can you say to them so that they are able to bring down the blockages and to express themselves? And I believe in order to do the line of work that we do, we have to put away the blockages in order for our hearts to speak.
Yes, well said. I think the most important thing to remember, first of all, is that the objective should not be, I want to write a book. The objective should be, what is this passion I have to bring forward to others? whether you're teaching a workshop or a class or serving as a support person or whatever that role is in your life as a healer or as a teacher or as a friend. What is your passion? To find that is the first step. What are you passionate about? And then what is the truth in that passion? And when you can touch that, finding what drives you, what gives you passion for life, and then bringing it forward in humility and love and truth, then you worry about writing a book. And most likely, when you reach that point of incredible passion about something that matters so much to you, it's just a natural consequence that you either journal it or you verbalize it into a tape recorder or, oh boy, that dates me, a tape recorder. or eventually get that down into language. And then, never worrying about the grammar, never worrying about the technicality of the message. You just get the message down.
Absolutely.
And worry about repairing it and the prose aspect of it later. But you get to the essence of what it is you want to share with humankind. And I think then the blockages dissipate.
Right. And it for the most part, just aligns itself in flow to where you are basically going towards the expression of your heart. And when I had received your book many weeks ago, as far as reading the content matter of it, before I even started even doing that, and I know we talked before we actually started recording here, but when I received your book in the mail and I held it for the very first time within my own hands, I felt a different type of feel to it. And you had mentioned earlier, some people experience a vibration. I experience information, and it was just going through my hands and just running throughout my whole essence, just in similar fashion as like when you feel a crystal and how many gravitate towards a specific crystal and they retrieve information. That was the same information that I was that I was receiving in essence. And I knew within moments of what the book was all about. Not to say that this book is very superficial or it is easily predictable, but within the sense that your book is very deep. It goes into many facets of what is going on throughout the world that we are not aware or conscious of, which is basically subdued from our focus and attention. And so just with that, can you comment a little bit forward with many of the other experiences that many of your readers have felt about your many books?
Okay, well, just to clarify for the audience, you're talking about The Emissary.
The Emissary, your most recent work.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's always been amazing to me, and I'm talking about almost 20 years now, that people, because joyously, the Cosmos of Soul came out in 2000, and, well, I'd say 14 years now, but I first channeled that in 1996, 97. And it's never stopped amazing me that people write to me. I'm talking at least once a week, I get a message from people that say that the book resonated to the point they felt it vibrating in their hands, or they had a sense of it coming to them, or it fell off a bookshelf. Really, I can't believe this happens so frequently, and it's always a delight to hear it. And particularly, this happens with The Cosmos of Soul and Atlantis Rising, the second book, what is the real one. The stories I get from people are just amazing. And one of them, for example, told me she went to the bookstore because she had some Native American material that she ordered from the bookstore. And she said, I only had enough money to pay for those two books. I'd been waiting for them for 2 months. I walked into the store. I'm waiting online at the cash register, and the Atlantis Rising falls on my head. And she said, it hurt. And I said, what? And she said, I put it back on the high shelf of the bookshelf, wondering how it could have fallen. because she said it was almost as if somebody was playing tricks on me. And she said I was getting annoyed because the person at the register was taking a long time. And it fell in my head again. At this point, I said, is there somebody? So I left the line. I went to look behind the bookshelf to see if there was somebody that I knew that was playing games. There was nobody there. She said, how do you explain this, Patricia? And I said, boy, I'll be darned if I know. I think it's amazing, and I hope you got the message that you were supposed to read the book. She said, oh, yeah. I bought the Atlantis Rising and just left the bookstore. And the rest has been a powerful journey for me, because the minute I opened the pages, I knew I was where I needed to be.
Right.
And so I think that there is that super consciousness level where we're all tapped in, and certain, let's say, vehicles of information are tools that we just access what we already know with. But perhaps, as you and I talked before the show started, the universal truth is there. There are simply many different expressions of that truth. And those expressions are usually very artistic in nature. Language is an art. So it happens again and again with my material, and I think that there, that, you know, in all humility, I would like to say that perhaps it has to do with the fact that this is channeled material, and people are perceiving that on some pretty intense, subtle level, as you did.
Oh,
and of
yes.
course, then you are psychic, so right. you are acting with it from your own higher perception, and sometimes you don't even need to read the written word. You just pick it up. It's like the Akashic Record. It's just, you absorb it right through the cover.
Absolutely. Within the book of what I have written, the Book of Positive Light, I've written a short little blurb about the Akashic Record and how it kind of relates to the channeled messages. And from my own experiences, from being an author myself, I didn't really understand the whole channeling phenomenon until many people had mentioned the writing in itself and how it differed from my own personality and way of interaction. And that didn't come about until it was released, and many months later, when people have read the book, they have noticed a message, but it wasn't from my way of playing words. It was from a different realm, and for which many people who are authors, such as yourself, are the mediums, or the conductors of such energy and information. Now, Patricia, with your most recent work with The Emissary, if you could just describe what this book is all about and where the passion comes from, and what the message entirely embraces. If you could describe essentially what the book is all about.
People who know my work and who know me as a personality know that I am a pretty verbal warrior for this planet. And I don't, I'm not in fear, and I don't hold back. And early on, I was conceived as a conspiracy theorist until I corrected everyone and told them I was a conspiracy realist. And that what was considered conspiracy 16 years ago is now out in the open. So let's get past that and start talking about the real things that are going on. So The Emissary is my attempt to bring forward, in a fictional way, with the mask of fiction, one of the most urgent things that's going on this planet, which is the manipulation of the atmosphere, the ocean, the earth itself, the whole musical frequencies of the planet by weaponry that is so highly advanced that we still don't understand it. And one of these is harp, which yes. I'm sure you're familiar with. And there are other weapons too, because let's face it, if the military is telling us what they've got, it's about 50 years old. So they're playing around with some pretty high-tech stuff, scalar waves, harp, and all these other nasty
Absolutely.
Little numbers. And my story is to expose to people, through a fiction, bad guys, good guys, quite a madcap adventure, but it's an appeal to the human race from the whales and dolphins who are telling us that there's intervention in the ocean and it could be a doomsday scenario. So what happens is in the first, the beginning chapter of the book, three events occur on the planet simultaneously. The first one happens in L.A., where a man is returning from work, and he stops to chat to a friend. And as they're chatting on the street, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of blackbirds drop dead simultaneously on the sidewalk. They pummel these two men, these dead bodies, they're dead on arrival. And then it cuts to, it's like a vignette, it cuts to Maine. At the same time that that occurs in Maine, a woman steps out on her backyard to take her kids out for a picnic on the beach, and she sees, as far as they can see, tens of thousands of dead fish just recently dead because there's still, some of them are still gasping for air. And she knows that something has happened, some toxic something, and she takes the kids and runs back in to the house. The third vignette, again simultaneously, on the other side of the planet in New Zealand, there is a, they wake up in New Zealand to find that there has been a dolphin and whale beaching, and there are 150 whales and dolphins dying or dead on this resort beach in New Zealand. And enter the protagonist, whose name is Jamie Hastings, who is a famous, famous psychic, very, very skilled psychic, and she's there trying to get away from the weight of the kinds of things she does. She works for the LAPD, the police department. She douses for oil and for water, and she's there to get away from it all. Of course, she lands right in the middle of this horrible scene with these dying whales. Now, what happens in that beginning is that she makes contact with the soul of a dying humpback whale who is pregnant. And as the whale dies, Jamie helps her over the Rainbow Bridge. And this catapults her on an adventure that involves her being the emissary for the whales and dolphins who are determined to get the human race to wake up to what's really going on. And it is quite a ride, I'm sure you'll agree. Lots of unexpected surprises and bad guys and quite a Hollywood-worthy film script, I would say, but always with the message for the reader that we are the guardians of this planet and we have to take back the power of the planet before it's too late.
Now, the protagonist of the not only of your screenplay but of your book in itself. What is the main purpose of what is happening? And I'm sure it is connected with the mass beachings of the whales and dolphins and many other fish. And of course, it ties in well with what is happening above water as well. And what you have related to from many of your books, that HAARP plays a significant interconnection to many of what conspiracy theorists have made mentioned from recent past. And to tell you the truth, just saying the whole conspiracy theory thing, it's a negative connotation. It almost seems like it's a mind control prompt that automatically discounts the credibility of anybody who mentions that, wouldn't you say? And by you just changing the verbiage around the frequency of that word, a conspiracy, a realist, it kind of offsets the negatory nature of that was, I guess, initiated as the intended purpose of that mind control prompt, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's really interesting, the power of language, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Oh, definitely.
And we need to be so aware of that, and I'd like to see more emphasis on language being used correctly. Because we're getting, you know, if we continue the way we're going, we'll become a civilization of grunters and app clickers. I think that, again, this conspiracy theorist term has been a very comfortable place for the powers that don't want people to be aware and awake to place people who are bringing forward information that is alternative to the gobbledygook of mainstream media. And the salve that we're being fed and being given to use on the wounds of reality. I hate to be using such a metaphor, but since we're talking about language, but I think that there's very little conspiracy left. It's out there. Back in the old days, before 2000, the year 2000, it was a different picture. But now all of these things that were considered conspiracy are out there. We've got disclosure happening daily. We've got military people and aeronautics people. And every day we get more information about UFOs and ET reality. This is no longer conspiracy. This is reality. And we have the truth about vaccines and what they're really doing, Monsanto, all of these realities that are unfolding now are no longer to be classified as conspiracy theories. They're happening.
Absolutely.
And so I'm honored to be one of the, I don't want to call myself a pioneer, but I certainly was very courageous back in 1996 when I was putting this information out and was one of the first people to talk about HARP. Or chemtrails, that I remember when the Atlantis Rising came out, people were saying, "What are you talking about?
Exactly.
You're at a risk off the charts here." And I openly spoke about HARP and chemtrails and chipping of human beings and a lot of things that, again, were called conspiracy theories then, but are now openly available to people. And my desire is to bring forward information, take it out of the hidden, the occult, where we're not supposed to access it, and we don't want to talk about it because it's too horrible, and look at it, be informed by it, and then find positive action to help us balance out the negativity of those things and take positive action to tilt the scale to the positive.
Yes, I totally agree. Even just with everything that I have been going through myself, you know, just putting all of that fear to the side and becoming courageous enough and empowering ourselves with what truths which must have to be released and exposed. That is a journey and most definitely for sure a passion of many people who are courageous enough to bring this information forward to the common audience, which is the people of planet Earth. Now, as we are digging deeper into the last 3 minutes of the first segment of the show, please, Patricia, we will definitely go further and deeper into the message of the emissary, which is your most recent work. Please, Patricia, please provide us with for our listeners on how we can gain access to your websites and how your growing and inspiring fan base can be able to contact you and how they can be able to purchase a copy of your new book, The Emissary.
Okay, well, my main website is SyrianRevelations.net. However, I also have a website for The Emissary, which is TheEmissary.net. So people are welcome to, they can find out more about the book itself on that website. And then, of course, my long-standing website, the SyrianRevelations.net, is filled with all kinds of information about all the expanse of the work that I've done.
Wonderful. And so, ladies and gentlemen, I have with me tonight the inspiring, the courageous, and the highly commendable Patricia Corey, earthly renowned traveler, healer, spiritual leader, prolific writer, and I would have to say screenplay writer as well, and the author of her new book, The Emissary, on Quantum Mindfulness Radio.
My name is M.A. Carano, experimental philosopher and systems consultant. And you're listening to Quantum Mindfulness Radio, live on PBS. Check me out at www.avatarparadigms.com for your latest Meta Noetic hookup. Definitely. If it's not mainstream, then you're on PBS.
Hello, my name is Dr. Advij, author of my new book, You're Not Crazy, You're Awakening, and you are listening to Quantum Mindfulness Radio on the BBS Radio Network. And remember, if it's not on mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
Hi, this is Tina Saki, best-selling author of My Spirit Is Not Religious, A Guide to Living Your Authentic Life. I help people self-heal by guiding them to release limiting beliefs and patterns, so that you can live spiritually open and authentically. and you are listening to Quantum Mindfulness Radio, hosted by Joe Ayapana. Namaste.
In a world where what we hear, see, and feel is elusively believed to be truth, comes an inspiring book that chronicles the journey of one's courage in seeking to find clarity from that of a different, more profound, more resounding, and inviting truth. A truth from within. Introducing the Book of Positive Light, Remembrance of the Heart. Discover the memoir and journal of author Joel Ayala Ayapana as he invites readers to explore the effortless powers within and the inner makings of their own hearts as they are guided by the very pages of this book. As a template to further exploring themselves from within to the point of self-rediscovery, author Douglas Ross Hamilton writes, "The Book of Positive Light is a journeyman's guide to grasping the import of acquiring the inner light." Get your copy today at most major online bookstores, including Amazon.com. The Book of Positive Light, Remembrance of the Heart, is made available right here at HollywoodBookTrailers.com.
And now we are back to Quantum Mindfulness Radio, and I have with me tonight for tonight's show world-renowned intuitive traveler, spiritual leader, public speaker, writer, and the author of over 11 books, and as well as the emissary herself to the guardians and the keepers of the vibrational plane, the emotional epicenter of Mother Gaia, our brothers and sisters, the whales and dolphins. And of course, the author of her new and highly revealing book, The Emissary, which has been launched into major motion picture production. Thank you, Patricia, for joining us here once more tonight.
Thank you. I just want to correct you. It's not in production yet, but fingers crossed it will be soon.
And just to clarify that as well, are there any specific actors, actresses that have been invited to gain participation within this production?
There are. I'm not at liberty to say who they are because there are discussions in progress, but I will say that they're talking about A-list actors and A-list directors. So the intention for this book is to make it a blockbuster film, not just a documentary or something. They're really going for the big talent, and fingers crossed, that's going to happen soon. And what I'd like to say is that when people read the story, hopefully they will envision who they think would play the lead. And one of them really speaks out, and that's the character of Captain Jimbo.
Definitely.
Far, everybody that reads that book, that writes to me, envisions one particular actor to play Captain Jimbo. Do you have someone involved?
Just from your description as of now and in the book, and I believe he's in the movies right now as we speak. So, yeah, we'll definitely talk about that after the show so we don't reveal too much about that. And just transitioning into further thought, what had actually come forth first? Was it the novel or the screenplay for our audience members to know?
Well, interestingly enough, I wrote the screenplay first, and it's a great story because I woke up at the usual 4 a.m., which is when my witching hour, if you'd like to call it that, was always for the channeled work, always 4 a.m. And I got the message that I would be writing a movie screenplay because the council wanted me to reach a bigger audience with some urgency. And I said, okay, write a movie. And I went on the internet and Googled how to write a screenplay. This is the truth, how to write a screenplay on Google. And I looked at a couple of sites. And, you know, of course, there are people that go, you know, there are universities for this. But how to write a screenplay. I got a few tips. I bought the software and I was off and running. And I wrote the screenplay in 3 months.
3 months. Amazing.
And it was embraced rather quickly by the producer, it was effortless, which is, I think you'll agree, when it's effortless, it's, you usually know you're on the right track. So it was 3 months to write it, got the screenplay picked up within 3 months after that. And when I wrote the novel, it took me 3 months to write the novel.
I mean, 3 months. I've heard of different programs where you can get a book done in 3 months, but just thinking about it, I'm like, that's almost an impossibility. But you had made it made manifest.
Well, it was, bear in mind that it was my first novel.
Right.
My other books changed material, so I don't have any writing rules like educated, trained writers have. I just sat down and said, okay, and I had nothing in mind. The story just came to me. So I know that I'm greatly assisted because truly, from start to finish, in fact, my publisher said, for the novel, she said, well, should we try for a one-year period for your contract? And I said, I can do it faster than that. And she said, well, 1 year isn't much time to write the novel, even though you've got the screenplay. I said, I'll be doing it faster than that. And I insisted. So 3 months later, I said, okay, here's the manuscript. And the reason is because it was guided. I had a lot of major assistance from higher planes. And because I was so compelled to get that story out, as you said, I did very little else. My life kind of just, it was taken over by writing this. And there were days when I would write 17 hours a day.
Absolutely inspirational. And this information, from my own experiences and my own research, not only just feeling the book within its meaning, but also in reading the book in itself, I was also compelled to look further into the legitimacy of what you were talking about in many other facets, shapes, and forms. And I totally agree with what the message of what you're trying to portray out there to the audience as far as in becoming more aware of what is actually happening. Definitely just going back into the main story of the book, you have mentioned the darker forces out there and their use of certain materials and weaponry and technology. Can you explain it in brief as far as what they are doing right now as it relates to what you are basically stating as a fiction and how it kind of relates to some truths out there, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. One of the main themes of The Emissary is that the Army and, the Navy is using very high-powered sonar in the oceans. They're doing tests for whatever purpose the tests are. And the weapons that are being used on this planet are not just being used in the drama of the wars that we know about. There's all kind of experimentation going on. There are, sometimes I wonder if it's deliberate trying to kill the whales and dolphins because they're hired consciousness beings, and we know there is an energy that wants to bring the planet down. And this is a theme that rides through a lot of my work. Is this deliberate? Are they really trying to silence the music of the ocean? So one of the themes here is that this, and a theme in my other work as well, the Earth is a musical instrument. It's a living conscious being. Gaia, Mother, has emotion. She has blood, that's the oil, and the emotional body is the water. And, you know, you mentioned the wonderful Dr. Emoto. And he taught us a lot about the consciousness of water. So if you keep the water disturbed, polluted, and unharmonious, you kill the mother. So the whales and dolphins are trying to hold their job on this planet. And as galactic beings, because my understanding is that the whales and dolphins exist on many planets, and on many levels of reality, is to hold the musical frequencies of the Earth and other planets in balance, and therefore hold the emotional body of these planetary deities in balance. And then planet to planet, they weave a sort of musical consistency through the entire network, which is the cosmos of soul. It's kind of esoteric in a way to talk about that at the galactic level, but on the Earth level, it's very logical. The Earth has a physical body, it has the soil, it has the water, it has the blood, which is, again, the oil, okay?
Absolutely.
And the message in all of my work, particularly The Emissary, is that the whales and dolphins are trying to tell the human race, if you don't pay attention to the disharmony that's going on, the deliberate destruction of the ocean, the planet will self-destruct. And so, as although it has a sort of an ominous aspect to it, there is an incredibly beautiful story that unfolds where the whales and dolphins choose Janie Hastings to be their emissary and to bring the message of what's really going on to the human race before it's too late.
Right. And I just love the way you poetically describe their mission and the work that they do within the water and how it relates to Dr. Emoto, the recent and late Dr. Emoto and his work, and how intention essentially motivates the creation and manifestation of how water basically geometrically forms in essence to a certain vibration and frequency. And the weaving of music and sound and vibration of frequency, that the sheathing of intention by these cetaceans, the whales and dolphins, and what they do. Wouldn't you say that there is, there's a strong esoteric portrayal here, but I believe, wouldn't you say that there is also a link to a high degree with quantum theory?
Absolutely. It's all vibration. Everything we are learning, that science is approaching what spiritualists have been saying all along, that everything is vibration. Sound, energy, everything is a vibrational frequency. And so when we look at Emoto's work and we see how the energy of thought, the frequency of love being sent out as a frequency of mind to a water molecule, and having that water molecule, which is all disrupted and broken and disharmonious, begin to immediately start forming the perfected six-sided star formation with the message of love, speaks to quantum physics. It speaks to it speaks to the God force.
Yes.
And all that is the perfected form of sacred geometry, call it as you will, it is the God force, whatever you perceive that to be. And that the mind of an observer in an experiment can simply alter the broken pattern of a molecule of water from Hiroshima by sending it love and telling it it's beautiful and telling it it's perfect. And then the next time this is frozen, this sample, it is now a perfected six-sided star. This is remarkable, utterly remarkable work from Dr. Massaro, one of the great geniuses of our time.
Yes. And the
message also from that we need to perceive about the whales and dolphins' work is they are singing the music of the ocean. They are relaying music from point to point around the planet, because I've learned that a compact whale can send a song 1,000 miles away.
Amazing.
1,000 miles. That is definitely not for mating.
No, no.
There's a war going on. And then that whale 1,000 miles away can pick up that pattern and send it another mile. There are remarkable things being done by researchers now who will play a certain music into the ocean. The humpback will start to sing it back, and then 1,000 miles away, a researcher in Hawaii will say, hey, we've just picked up that same melon.
Amazing.
35. Yeah.
Amazing how that can just happen. Yeah. Yes.
What I'm learning as a researcher for the whales and dolphins is that they are doing a sort of musical relay around the planet for purposes that we don't understand, but what I believe have to do with keeping the love and the balance in a very Masaru Emoto way in the water. And remember also that they're telling the water, you are music, you are perfection. They're telling the crystals of salt in the water, you are geometrically perfect, you are resonant. Everything is
in a way, the message is as well, just attempting to allow people to be open with the reality that we are to remember the beauty and the greatness of what we were ultimately made to be, to manifest. And the water in itself, by looking and how love, when it interacts with water, it becomes very exponential. And especially with your description of the significance of the whales and their music and their song, and how it reaches thousands and thousands of miles, and how that becomes the web that interconnects the planet together emotionally. And when you say the planet's water in relationship to land, isn't it over 70%, I believe?
Somewhere between 75 and 80%, and that is the exact ratio of the human body.
And
so
that's, yeah.
Stands to reason that we understand that we are the microcosm of the macrocosmic Earth, and that if Earth's emotional body is upset, we cannot find balance because we're reflections of that.
Right.
So all the more reason why we need to dedicate an incredible amount of consciousness to the healing of the ocean with great haste.
Right. And that further digs deeper into the deeper realms of sacred geometry, the Fibonacci sequence, and how that relates with us and with the animals of the earth and the guardians, the whales and the dolphins. So essentially, it brings back a concept of unity, of oneness with all walks of life in connection to the divine and with Mother Gaia. Wouldn't you say?
Well, yes. I think that we are at a position now on this planet where we're seeing great destruction in our ecosystems, and people are becoming more and more detached and plugged into the virtual reality and forgetting that the ultimate reality is that they are Earth beings and that we are guardians of this planet and that we've got to do a better job of that because we're losing species daily. The ecosystems are under attack by the minute, and that it's time for us to remember the holistic, which is where the term comes from, the holistic significance of the entirety of this planet and all living things upon it. We're all connected. We're all aspects of this Earth. So the importance and the significance of being spiritual beings having an Earth experience is that we recognize that we reconnect with this Mother Earth, the soil, the water, the air, all in under attack and needing us to take command and heal this planet. And I, the ultimate optimist, as I said earlier on, I am not afraid to look at the problem because a lot of people don't want to talk about it. It's too scary. Let's just stay in positivity. And I, my approach may not be right, but it works for me, is let me see it all. Let me talk about whatever I need to talk about.
Yeah.
And let me find from that learning a positive thing that will guide me to affect change for the positive. And that's what I do in my work and as a teacher and in my personal life. And all the things that give me passion are about finding ways to transform negativity into positivity.
Yeah, it's all about alchemy in many ways. Just the whole mystery of creation and manifestation and how we can take words within itself and follow suit with it with an emotion and then the feeling. And I believe that's what the cetaceans do, essentially. And like you had mentioned before, the significance of how it interconnects with Mother Earth, the watery plains of its existence and the emotional side of things, and how that is very important in making the transition from this planet of what it is and what it is observed as a fearful place. And now when we place that intention, that feeling and an emotion through that platform, that medium of water, the emotional platform of Mother Gaia, and that is the essence of or the glue to bringing that love across the planet in a simple way.
And I would also like to say that we, Atlantis, serves as a paradigm for what is happening now.
Yes.
We are once again confronted with runaway technology, and interestingly, those who have an affinity for Atlantis discuss openly, one of them, that the technology was crystal-based, and so is it now. Remember, the computers are silicon. Silicon Valley is silicon, it's quartz crystal. So once again, we've got runaway technology that in many ways is great and in many ways is separating us from our earthly consciousness. So once again, we're at the Atlantean paradigm, and as we know or believe, Atlantis went down. And my question is, are we going to resolve it and rise above it? Are we going to let ourselves go down again, knowing that if it does crash, everything does crash, we will bounce back again because the Earth is eternal and we are eternal. But I believe we're going to turn this around, and it's not going to be another Atlantean Armageddon, what's unfolding on this earth, but rather a huge awakening. We're in it now. More and more people are waking up, and I think we can still alter the reality of what's happening on the planet at the ecological level to heal it. And that's what the emissary is proposing.
Yes, I love that, the message, essentially, of what you are attempting to put out there. And you have done so with the emissary in a more fictional novel way of describing that effort. Not only knowing about the light, but knowing the darker forms of what is existent out there. And of course, you cannot know of that light, or even the light of anyone for that matter from within, unless you know of the central darkness of what landscape that we live in right now. And you know, I definitely applaud the way that you have placed creativity in there. And just thinking about you just a few days ago, I made up a new word for you, or actually a word in itself, and I called it being courageous enough to following your passion and power and making truth.
Oh, what a lovely word.
You like
I
that? Yeah, putting your creativity with courage and able to putting forth the truth of what you were made to manifest. And definitely there's many people around us in human form, people who have passed, and as well as people on the other side. And if you can comment as well as the significance and the synchronicity between you and Dr. Emoto, and the interconnection with that and his recent passing, and as well as Dolores Cannon, and with the many people who are connected with her work as well, such as Dee Wallace, Paul Liftiniger, Jen Clarfield, and her recent passing within the same week, along with the graduating class of Nelson Mandela and Dr. Maya Angelou, and all these wonderful people who are crossing. And I do believe that they're doing so. That they've done their work here, yes, but I believe on the other side, on the other plane of things, that they are doing wonderful things as well in connection to the keys that they have passed on forward to you, me, and many other workers of the light.
Yeah, indeed. Well, in the perennial immortality of soul rising, this delineation between life and death disappears, and we simply progress. And although stuck in this illusion of density, we have such a hard time imagining the immortality of our being, of our soul, of our consciousness. For those of us who have had near-death experiences or been on the other side, and I've had the honor of that experience more than once, I know without question, and I always preface this by saying personally, because I'm never trying to convince anybody else of my reality, but I personally know without question that we do not die. I mean, it's so life-altering when you know that, because there's nothing left to fear. So thank you for the word courageous. I love it. But I don't feel courageous. I feel clear. I just feel clear. This is, you know, if they want to kill me, somebody want to shoot me, go for it. I know that we don't die, and that I'll just be doing what I do in another location. And so to the great teachers and wisdom holders who have already crossed over that bridge.
Absolutely.
Thank you all, because for what you did here in this illusion, and we know that you're over there helping in the transition of all this planet and its immense transition into a finer consciousness, which is described also in the Syrian Revelations as the ascension of the entire solar system, and the immense transition we're in, and that there is really no detachment. The wisdom will continue, and these beings will find other ways to send through the information, whether that's through another human being or who is divining them, or simply working on higher planes, and we don't necessarily know how. But there's no loss. There's just transformation. And we need to honor that and celebrate that.
So in conclusion to our broadcast, as we are nearing the many final minutes of this show,
yes,
and it goes so quickly, what is the good news for us now that we know of the potentiality that is out there, that is coming into awareness from its hiding of sorts? What can we expect for the next following years to come as far as the awakening of mankind to this wisdom, to this truth, to this reality?
Well, that's a huge question, and I don't know if there's any specific answer to it other than that we are daily feeling the enormity. This is not a tranquil time. This is not the era of life where everything is just fine and everybody's got a chicken in the pot and a static sort of time of human development. This is radical change, radical change. Well, the poles might be tipping, the uprooting of tradition and religions and all this drastic change. The earth herself is rocking and rolling. And we came here, I like to remind people this. If you believe that the soul is infinite and that each spark of light that is a soul knows what it's doing when it decides to materialize as a three-dimensional being, knows when, knows to what parents, knows where to fulfill a mission, then what I'd like to say to people is what incredible things await us. One, learning, and as you teach in your work, remembering who we really are, owning the fact that we decide everything, and despite all of the illusion that surrounds us, we know when we come in and we know when we're going out, and everything else that unfolds in this reality is open to interpretation. And with that, knowing that we're immortal, there can't be fear. There cannot be fear of Armageddon. Because, so what? So what if it mutates and the entire planet turns into a floating jellyfish? We'll simply migrate to another three-dimensional framework. Or another Earth in a parallel reality. And as complex as that is to end the show on, I would like to remind people that there are so many parallel universes,
yes,
that don't exist in Earth, in this solar system, in this galaxy, but perhaps in thousands of them playing out different options in your life path. So my message to people is have a great time with life.
Absolutely.
Be afraid of things. Examine it, play with it, reach for the stars and be the curious, be filled with wonder, and face your fear.
Wonderful.
We had such an opportunity to do that as we do now. All bets are off. All limitations are off as long as you don't bow down to fear.
And that is the message, ultimately. The illusion of fear, we become non-reactive to that and even to the negativity. And we place our attention and focus our light. We place our positive light towards the goodness of everyone in connection, from all of animal, human being, to the connection of the divine with Mother Gaia. And that is essentially what we were trying to do here. In the message that we're portraying from amongst the illusion of things and awakening, within this awakening process. And I applaud the work that you do, definitely for sure, Patricia. And thank you for being here. Thank you for being here as a leader and a trailblazer of this movement of awakening for everyone. And thank you for
being here too, Joel.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And there you have it. Definitely, Patricia, I would love to have you for a future show, and definitely for continued progression in our interconnection and the work that we do together. Thank you. And there you have it, the wonderful and inspiring Patricia Corey, world-renowned intuitive activist, spiritual leader, light worker, prolific writer, and the author of her newest book and screenplay, The Emissary, on Quantum Mindfulness Radio.
Check. Listen it again. Push record. Quick wish for my pink pockets. Switch the oil to the tongue and spit it in a can. A greasy drug fuel for them big kid rockets. A Iraqi monument and view it astonished. Wonder at nostalgic fondness. Images of hard-hit continents conjured constantly. About as repairable as broken promises. Honestly, the bombs didn't want to bother me. Ever see flames in the rain? Options play possum, throw stones, go rock them, go drop them, spot or not, or not in they nugget. Can't stop when they dropping apples of awesome moss. Moon confused, Rasputin with poison lies. Yo, options play possum, throw stones, go rock them, got them, go drop them, spot or not in they nugget. Can't stop when they dropping apples of awesome moss. Moon confused, Rasputin, polluting with them poison lies. Rendition of what he tells you you're missing. Have you heard this is the beginning of his techno hypnotism? Watch the slurs come. Major acceptance, connect your answer to flavor. Sell it later, protect your neck. They get slid at any second. They infect and make a play and say anything for the record. Hate to measure how to escalate an educated elevator. Decorated, instigator, delegated, dictator. Nothing to wait for, come. Take your paper through a complex paper. Then play your players for something greater. Bring the heat like equators and later for them alligators to see ya.
We'll be right back.
They never seen flames in the rain. They never seen flames in the rain. Yeah, yeah, flames in the rain. They never seen flames in the rain.
Other previous broadcasts, please visit us at Quantum Mindfulness Radio's official website at www.quantummindfulnessradio.com. Again, that is www.quantummindfulnessradio.com. All previous and prior broadcasts are archived at the BBS Radio Network. Please join us every other Monday, 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on the BBS Radio Network. Again, I thank you once more for joining me here tonight on Quantum Mindfulness Radio.